So if you're doing an internal event versus an external event, I would say ROI being really important for external, and then internal, how are you thinking about or measuring the return on emotion? And that might be, you know, an employee NPS score, but that's always something that kind of plays into the equation as well and is, you know, a great use case for events in terms of internal bringing employees together.
I'm Jonathan Gandolf, and welcome to the Content Cocktail Hour, powered by The Juice. Our mission is to squeeze out the deepest secrets of B2B marketing professionals to help you push your brand to the forefront of the industry. Let's raise a glass. Welcome, everybody. I am thrilled to be joined by Kate Hammett, CMO at Splash today. Kate, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, Jonathan. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yes, we've crossed paths a few times with the Splash team on the event circuit, so I'm excited to dig in today. I was lamenting about our spring event season coming to an end here recently, but I'm guessing event season is just a year-round activity for your team.
It's pretty seasonal in the sense that, you know, there are high times and low times, but I feel like events are on the brain for us all year round. And I feel like once we're, I mean, not even when we're done with an event, we're thinking about the next one and feel like our customers are in the same type of rotation. So yeah, it's events 365.
I love it. Well, we will dig into everything event-led growth today. I'm really excited for this conversation. Feel like we have one of the experts in the event field in this conversation today. So I'm excited. I've got the pen ready. I'm going to be taking some notes. But before we dig into the meat of the conversation, Kate, I'd love to hear in your own words kind of a little bit about your background, your path to Splash, and what you view your role as at Splash nowadays.
Awesome. Thanks. Yeah, I've had a great career with events being like the common thread throughout my whole experience in the working world. Started as a paralegal, actually, coming out of University of Virginia and started work for the U.S. Golf Association. I know zero about golf, but I was excited. I was a college athlete, so I felt like it was going to be a soft landing for me to stay in the sports realm. And sports marketing sounded really cool. And so I was working on the US Open and the Women's Open and Senior Open and all the things that kind of go into events, really from the operational side. And then started helping, you know, the person in hospitality sell some tents and get exposure in that area of the business. And I thought, this is cool. Less contract reading and started to slowly kind of migrate over. Got to a sports marketing agency that was, again, in golf. It was like my dirty secret to be a non-golfer in the golf world. A lot of the perks were certainly lost on me, but started to get more into marketing in that space, more events. Found my way to Cvent, got hired as one of the first marketers, and was able to work at Cvent for 9 years from pre-revenue to IPO, which was an incredible experience, especially since in marketing at that time, it was, I'm going to date myself, but like the dawn of social media, the dawn of digital advertising. You know, we went from being very sales-led into more the website era. So it was really formative time to be at an event company. And I was running all of the field events as well as doing a ton of other, you know, marketing functions over there as I grew my career. Left Cvent after 9 years, went into healthcare. And so I had a stint in healthcare, which was very interesting, being, you know, head of marketing, was in healthcare for a number of years, and then decided I really missed the ICP that I felt most at home with. And that was, surprise, surprise, marketers, marketing. Got an offer from Splash and came back to the event industry. So really excited to be back and be with my people. So my career advice is always, you know, if you're going to take a job, make sure as a marketer, make sure you would want to have dinner with your ICP, because you're basically going to be eating like breakfast, lunch, and dinner with them. So that really like guided my, you know, my job hunting process before I found Splash and found my home here. And it's been, you know, the rest is history.
I love that perspective of make sure you want to have dinner with your ICP. I always, one of my sayings, breaking bread, I think, is the best marketing strategy. And I think that's a very literal interpretation of what you just said. And I love the winding career path. I spent a brief stint in the healthcare space as well and realized that's probably not the right space for me personally long-term, but learned a lot. Yeah, so very fascinating. I appreciate that kind of walkthrough of your background. Well, this is the Content Cocktail Hour. Kate, we always ask all of our guests, what are you enjoying drinking nowadays?
Definitely a bubbly connoisseur. So I would say that you know, lemon sorbet bubbly seltzer is the drink of choice on a daily basis. But when this podcast airs, it'll probably be, you know, deep summertime. So I'm a big spicy margarita fan. Nice. If we're going to have, you know, something that's not just a everyday beverage. So
I like it. I'm drinking a grapefruit seltzer as we speak and a big spicy margarita fan as well. So let's dig into the spicy topics of the conversation today. Event-led growth. I feel like that is a something a lot of people are talking about, probably not as many people executing on, a lot of people thinking about it. Maybe let's just start there. How do you define event-led growth and how are you executing it at Splash?
I think the common misconception about events is that you do one event and all these results happen.
That's not how it works?
That's not how it works, believe it or
not. Dang
it. There's a lot that goes into event-led growth, but to pull way back, we think of it as really a go-to-market motion. So, you know, we have inbound-led, we have outbound-led, we have partner-led, ecosystem-led, community-led, and then product-led as well, obviously. And event-led has kind of found its way into the go-to-market motion. And you can have multiple motions at play. And, you know, content really underpins all of this, of course. But the go-to-market motion for events is really about using the events channel in a programmatic way that is driving repeatable outcomes in revenue and expansion. Of course, engagement and education are also a part of that. And you want to make sure that you're having, sometimes those are kind of key outcomes of event-led growth. But the real, you know, the really important key piece is it growing your revenue? Is it expanding your business? And then all of those other sort of leading indicators that come along as well. So that's how I would define event-led growth truly as a go-to-market motion.
I like it. It's something we've leaned into in a big way at The Juice. I mean, we're a pretty lean team, but honestly, what's been working well for us from an events perspective is I tell people all the time, it is for us at our stage inherently, like what we're doing are things that don't scale, that aren't super repeatable, but they stand out. The fact that you're almost repeatably doing things that aren't repeatable, if that makes any sense at all, but it's like, it's become a big, in the back half of last year, events drove about 60% of our pipeline. So it's something we believe in a really big way. And I've been impressed by what I've seen Splash executing as well. How do you think about the balance of virtual versus in-person? I feel like everybody, like during COVID, we built up this really strong muscle of like virtual events and execution and almost to the point of exhaustion. And then feels like the pendulum swung and in-person events are really big now. But even the execution of in-person events from like booth sponsorship to like activation around the event is changing a little bit. How do you either treat those as part of the same program, or are those two different kind of streams that should be treated independently?
Yeah, I think the best way to approach that event mix is to think of it like, you know, kind of a microcosm of the marketing mix. How do virtual events and IRL in-person events really go hand in hand in terms of meeting your goals, augmenting your strategy? So the way we think about it at Splash is really we use virtual events in two ways. I would say one, very top of funnel, thought leadership oriented webinars that are very broad based, come one, come all. We want the community to be there, even if they're, you know, with a competitor or they're not, you know, a perfect fit for our ICP. They might be at a company later. We want to share our knowledge and share it freely with the event marketing community, and then use that as a top of funnel exercise. And then we use it with customers as well. Obviously, from a virtual perspective, we want them to feel like power users of our platform. We want them to be empowered to do all the use cases that they need to on Splash. So, you know, it's usually virtual for those two use cases is really strong. And then for middle of funnel or bottom of funnel, and for customers as well, we think more about where are we meeting our buyer? Where are we meeting people who are serious about evaluating Splash? Where is human touch really necessary? Where are we providing networking, providing community, bringing even the community geographically together? We do a lot of networking events and not talking about Splash, but we call them, it's our Magic Spark series. And we hop around to different cities and bring together, you know, groups of event marketers and watch the sparks fly, essentially, because you get all these like minds in a room, the creativity, the data-driven approaches. It's really cool to see, you know, what happens when everybody's together. So where are we providing value there that in person really justifies everybody's time and energy? So we try to think about it in that funnel framework. And then we also try to think about it in a value framework, where from an opportunity perspective, does it make the most sense to ask someone to spend time with you, and making sure that we're going to capitalize on that ourselves and make sure that we, you know, show up with the right type of people who can make the most from that experience, and even more so provide that value for the prospect, for the customer, and make sure that their trip there and their time away from their family and friends is worth it.
It's a high bar. There's some very like literal pressure to cross when it is all about, somebody's away from their home, away from their routine, making sure that's a positive experience. It's a very real expectation. I'm curious, from the CMO seat, how do you measure events? And I know that's like a broad, unfair question, but like, what is the core success metric as you're like, you guys are at Forrester B2B Summit. What makes that a successful event for you versus an unsuccessful event for you? Is there one metric? Is it a blend of metrics? How do you measure the ROI on event investments?
Great question. Something we talk about so much with our customers, amongst ourselves, in our thought leadership. Because I'm a former paralegal and I'm going to give you a lawyer answer, it depends. but seriously, I think about it differently at different points in the funnel. And example at Forrester. So what we're looking to do is have a lot of meetings with customers and with prospects. That's sort of our leading indicator that we would look at just coming out of Forrester. Rarely are we able to do a ton of demos or get people in a certain stage in the funnel from a net new meeting at Forrester, but we're looking for that traction. Did we meet, you know, our buyer where they are, and did we get the revenue in the room? I think that's like broadly the way we look at it. And so that's a great example. When I look at a larger activation, perhaps like a virtual event, maybe we're doing a product launch, I'm not only looking for, you know, those sort of revenue metrics and down funnel metrics, but also looking at like, what's our share of voice? Did we get any media pickup? Satisfaction from the event is also hard to capture with a Forrester example, but with a virtual event, how did we provide, you know, ROI for the attendee? Was there value in our content? And did that, you know, meet the mark? You promote your event, you get time with somebody. Did it meet expectation? Did it exceed expectation? We are always going for those 10 out of 10 survey results. Where can we be better? And getting that feedback. Some people like to share the term return on emotion when we're used by customers and for ourselves, for our own offsites with employees. You know, we bring everybody to an offsite. We take everybody for a week out of their day-to-day, out of remote life and into real life. This most recent time, it was in Puerto Rico. So the return on emotion was naturally going to tick higher, you know, being in that sort of setting. But getting the feedback there, was it, you know, do you feel a stronger pull towards the organization? So if you're doing an internal event versus an external event, I would say ROI being really important for external, and then internal, how are you thinking about or measuring the return on emotion? And that might be, you know, an employee NPS score, but that's always something that kind of plays into the equation as well. And is, you know, a great use case for events in terms of internal bringing employees together.
ROE, that's really fascinating. I might be stealing that one. Maybe our next episode will be all internal events, because I feel like that could be its own whole episode conversation.
It is, yeah. I mean, there's an art and science to events in general. And when you think about how it could be sliced and diced throughout the funnel, where the changes are from an external event to an internal event, the high touch, the content. I mean, there's so much to dig into. That's what makes events so cool.
Yeah, love that. Okay, so Splash is very, I would say, pretty far along the sophistication scale in your own event-led growth kind of motion. What would you say to somebody that's trying to get their organization to think more about event-led growth, or just trying to start their getting their team to invest in events? How would you kind of guide somebody getting started with event-led growth? What are the first initial steps they should be taking?
Yeah, I think there's, key things are trying to figure out what your strategy is for an event channel. And a lot of times marketers, like a CEO would come in and say, like, I think we should do an event, or I think we should activate here, or wouldn't it be cool if? The cool part about events is, like, everybody's been to events, we've all thrown events, you know, whether it's trying to get your friends to dinner or a birthday party or a wedding, what have you, we all have this human experience there. So a lot of times, you know, it's a, hey, there's a great idea, let's do an event. And I think approaching, making sure that the approach has the same rigor that you would do for another marketing channel. So if you're wanting to approach digital marketing for your strategy, you would develop a strategy first. You would assess skill sets for deploying that strategy. And you would say, okay, we have these areas of the funnel that we're trying to bolster and work on. How can digital advertising help us here? And the same has to be true for events. You know, if you feel like you want to get more top of funnel, you want more hand raisers, you want to have an under, you know, bringing in more demos, are you doing top of funnel work that is thought leadership based? Or are you doing top of funnel work that is more product led? And how do those two kind of come together? So that's just an example of how to think about this strategy. We do a lot of consults with our customers, and over time, just everybody's trying to iterate on what's my strategy, how am I deploying this, and making sure that they're staying top of mind with buyers or customers. A lot of our work is with customer marketers who are trying to generate more engagement, educate on the product, yield, you know, more monthly active users or more stickiness within their product, reduce churn, all of those things. So it's coming from those metrics and saying, this is what we want to impact. This is how we want the outcomes, what the outcomes to be, and then backing into the strategy from there. I think a very common mistake is the excitement over an event. And then you do that one event and you kind of look around and say, well, was it good? And, you know, that leaves you in this wishy-washy world of anecdotes that, unfortunately, I think a lot of marketers find themselves in when they are doing events. And so my biggest tip is to treat this like an actual marketing channel, because it is. So you need to make sure that you have the skill set, the technology, the outcomes, and the KPIs, and that you're able to track that back in order to make it successful and know that it's successful. I mean, stories are always good. We always have such great experiences in person that there's always that lift of, well, it was fantastic. And we saw this person and they talked about Splash and they saw our denim jackets and said it looked cool. You know, that's always great. And that can be a part of the narrative too. But approaching it this way, it gives you the data to back it up, which is really what it comes down to.
I think that's also great advice for, it'll tell you whether or not to reinvest. A lot of these events that you're sponsoring or that you're throwing become like annual.
Mm-hmm.
You think at the moment, you're like, oh yeah, I'll remember this event. But if you're not tracking it and that the opportunity rolls around again in 8 months to figure out if you're going to go invest in that event, if you don't have a good source of truth or a good record keeping of, was that a good event last year? You're going to end up making an anecdotal driven decision again. And I've learned from making that mistake in the past of, oh, it was a great event. We talked to a lot of good people, and not really having that record keeping system. And then the event rolls back around. You're like, I don't really know if we should invest in that event or not, because we haven't had that rigor that you mentioned. I think that's really great advice. I'm going to maybe step out of just the event-led growth conversation, although we might end up back in it depending on how you answer this question. But, you know, I'm always reading what are the top things on a CMO's mind, kind of the CMO trends reports, if you will. But maybe from a broader lens, like what is top of your CMO mind as we are, I guess we're starting, we're in the midst of 2024 now, but whether it's the macro environment, or kind of just all the shifts happening in marketing and AI right now. What's just kind of top of your priority list, or what are you thinking through from the CMO seat right now?
Yeah, there's a lot to think about these days, certainly in the technology sector and macro environment. I mean, I think we're still all in a how to make sure that we are in an efficient growth mode. And I don't see that changing anytime soon. Splash has always sort of been in efficient growth mode. So making sure that we are conservatively making decisions and data-driven decisions to produce growth. So it's just, you know, during down markets, it gets even more of a focus. So that's still certainly on my mind, is where can I make the buyer journey more efficient? How can I help buyers who are basically researching independently? They don't want to have a sales-led motion for 100% of their journey. They're 83% of the way done, you know, whatever the latest data says. What's going to be helping our buyer understand the market, make a great decision for their use case? Because there's a lot to really sift through in terms of platforms and providers. I mean, MarTech in general is just absolutely massive. So, and I have the same struggles. How do I create that business case? How do I move things, you know, through our own evaluation? So that's the great part about working with marketers. I understand it from my own experience. Other things that are top of mind are, how is AI going to impact our website, our traffic, our content? How does it need to shapeshift for that change? And what's ahead? A little bit of a black box. I mean, SEO has always been somewhat of a black box, but more so now than ever before. So that's definitely something that's top of mind as well.
There's a lot. Yeah, it is interesting. It feels like it's changing faster than ever, but there's also just more unknowns, I think, faster than ever about where it's going to go and when. So thanks for that peek inside the mind of a CMO. I really appreciate it. We always ask all of our guests, what is one unpopular opinion you have as it pertains to B2B or content marketing?
I would say, so anytime I get in a conversation about events with other business folks, it always goes to the trade show booth. I'm in, you know, marketing communities and CMO communities, and I'm like, how are we back here talking about just the booth? It's kind of like getting trapped in 2005 and not being able to get out. So I guess my unpopular opinion, which I'm trying to popularize, is that I think, you know, the large tentpole events are amazing. And those 2 or 3 days out of the year that might impact your pipeline in a large way are fantastic. But with today's buyer, what are you doing the other 362 days to meet them where they are, provide education, provide entertainment, and get that relationship going or continuing? So my unpopular opinion is, go beyond the booth. Don't focus so much on the booth and think about a broader strategy and a broader programmatic effort to meet your buyer.
Go beyond the booth. I like it. We can help you popularize that. We'll start it here and we'll be promoting that. So I like that perspective. I mentioned at the Juice, events have driven about 60% of our pipeline over the last 12 months. And we've only had, I think, like 2 booths at all of the events we've gone to. Mm-hmm. We've done things outside of the booth. For us, again, it's more of a efficiency decision. Mm-hmm. A lot of times we can activate around an event a little bit more efficiently than we can by sponsoring and having a booth. So I like it. We're in it together. We can take that to the masses.
I like it. Yeah. Take whatever works for your audience too. I love evangelizing with good partners. So
I appreciate it. Well, Kate, if people want to learn more from you or about Splash, what is the best way to do that?
About Splash, meet us on splashthat.com, and I'm on LinkedIn, so link up with me and let's chat more.
Cool. Well, Kate, we appreciate you joining us so much today. Really enjoyed the conversation. We'll have LinkedIn profiles, links to Splash in the show notes, so be sure to check those out. Listeners, watchers, thank you for joining us. Until next time, we'll see you soon. Thank you.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Thank you for joining the Content Cocktail Hour powered by The Juice. If you want to see more episodes or more resources curated for your role, join us on app.thejuicehq.com. See you next time. Same time, same place. Cheers.